As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keen, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal.
John Bavan with us now, the head of the BlackRock Investment Institute. John, I've been following your research, your writing, you know I do, and I'm pleased you're writing on something that I don't think enough people are thinking about, the appropriate time horizon to bring inflation back to target with the circumstances, the backdrop that we have at the moment. John, what is it and why aren't we talking enough about it?
There used to be, I'm old school, I guess, but there used to be two key principles underlying monetary policy. One was that you need to be thoughtful about dealing with trade-offs and being deliberate around that. And the other was about being forward-looking. Those two principles seem to be pretty much absent from the current discussion. And I think that speaks to the horizons here. We're dealing with a massive shock that is more of a supply in nature. And that leads to, we're just talking about how much GDP costs we need to go through. We think the GDP cost is pretty significant. If we want to bring inflation down to too quickly, it's a 2% of GDP, recession type we need to go through in short order. That's a very brutal cost. And nowhere in the discussion right now you see this explicitly being acknowledged, being discussed, or hearing from central banks on how they want to navigate that. We used to think that in the face of these shocks, it would take longer to bring inflation back to target. Nobody's really making this argument.
John, I want you to talk about the asymmetries there of strong dollar versus weak dollar. Now we have strong dollar. I'm not going to ask you for a level on your Canada on Looney at a 132. But what is the asymmetric differences of a bold, strong dollar versus a weak dollar reality? We don't have that right now. We have strong dollar. It seems new.
Yeah, I think we always break that down in terms of what we think is the key driver. Think of the currency being driven typically by two broad regimes, in my view. One is interest rate differentials, and the other is the broad risk-on, risk-off global sentiment. I think we're in a world now that is mostly driven by overall risk sentiment. So I see the gyration being about whether we are risk averse, which tends to provide a bid to the U.S. dollar, and that when that wanes, we see some weakening. So I think we haven't seen the full implication of this world yet. The pressure is going to put globally. Canada is one place, but like emerging markets. So that hasn't really played out yet. I think that's part of the
picture. That's where I wanted to go there, because Aussie yen is out 1.5 standard deviations, which is a rare occurrence. Tell me of the Pacific Rim risks that we face now, or are they in some way protected from the tumult in the Western world?
No one is protected, but I think there's homegrown kind of headwinds, right, that we see. We were just talking about lockdowns in China. So the pull of growth there has been challenged. We've been neutral on the region for some time now as a result of this. And I think a global recession or slowdown that would be significant will have some rippling effect there as well. So I think we see these this part of the transmission of the slowdown through the APAC Olive Grove.
Jean, good morning from London. What are the, good afternoon even now, time catching up with me. What are the monetary policy lags that we need to keep in mind when you're talking about the tightening of policy as you are there, and you're talking about the time horizons over which we should be correcting inflation? What are the lags in policy that you have in focus? I mean, I'm thinking here about the US.
So we, in general, I think we're still in the world where like monetary policy works with at least like, you know, a year to 2 year of lag. 18 months is the number you would get from typically if you pin me to one number. I think that still is the case in this world. And I would argue that it might be even more delayed because the interest rate here is not the cure for the source of the inflation we're experiencing. So we will need to basically crush the interest rate sensitive part of the economy, which is not the culprit of the inflation at this point, to really offset the other inflation pressures. And so that needs to work its way through the system. None of the rate hikes we've seen so far are really containing inflation. We're getting now to the phase where it's going to be restrictive. It will have an impact, but that's going to be about a 2024 story, really. And that's why I think we see a lot of optics of central banks talking tough on inflation. But this is really optics and politics of inflation, not really the economics of inflation.
So, Jean, let's talk about what it would take for you to get bullish on this equity market. Jean, what do you need to see?
We need to see a couple of things, right? I think now we are equities and generally are reflecting a path of policy tightening that is more or less in line with what we think will materialize. So, you know, Jackson Hole has, I think, crushed any hopes of backing off from hiking intentions soon. I think equities are starting to reflect that properly. The part that is not yet in the price is the earnings story. And, you know, we think we're going to see a recession early 2023 in the U.S., but it's happening earlier and deeper in Europe. And that is not reflected in the equity price. So to turn bullish, which will be the big call to make over the next few months, is when we're going to be able to start to look through the size of this recession. I have more handle on this. And the second is when we get to the point where we get some sense that central banks are waking up to the damage that is being caused and are starting to take that into account. So when we're going to start to see sign of that, I think we'll be now in a position to really talk about a version of a pivot or slowing down or stopping. And yeah, once we have visibility on this, then I think that's going to be a more positive backdrop.
We'll catch up soon on it. John, really deeply thoughtful stuff. We appreciate it. Jean Bavon there of the BlackRock Investment Institute.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It is a crisis in Germany. It is a crisis in Anna Edwards' United Kingdom, and it goes to, as John mentioned, the grid. Francisco Blanche, I've seen endless studies. Davos, you could fill up the promenade with all the fancy studies about what to do. Why can't we fix this energy crisis? Why can't we fix the global grid of electricity and hydrocarbons?
Well, Tom, kind of bringing a lot of issues into a single question, but I think the best answer that I can give you is the uncertainty that we have created in terms of what the future demand for energy looks like. If you start with the International Energy Agency's scenarios for 2050 for decarbonization, there's a huge gap between the business as usual scenario the aggressive scenario or the net zero scenario. And it's really hard to tell which way we're going to go into 2050, whether global coal demand is going to collapse, or maybe it's going to hold in a little bit, or maybe oil demand will collapse, or maybe it won't. And I think the same thing applies to electricity, right? So all of that's kind of really difficult, make it very difficult for companies to make a decision in terms of how to allocate their capital. And then, of course, we've had the Russia-Ukraine situation, which has made things a little worse.
Surveillance research, Francisco, is that you and Savita Subramanian are actually on speaking terms at Bank of America. She provides stunning leadership in the quantitative aspects of ESG. When you have a cup of coffee with her, can you state that ESG is here to stay, or is it dead with the war in Ukraine?
Look, I mean, I think ESG is here to stay in most people's minds. I think that's true for investors, it's true for governments, which I think ultimately means for a lot of the pieces of the energy sector you're talking about, like how you fix them. I think you're going to have to end up with a lot more government involvement. We've seen that already in Germany and in France with the takeover of Uniper and EDF. I think we'll see just a lot more participation of governments generally. Even when you look at oil and gas investments, OPEC this time around, particularly the Gulf Cooperation Council countries, have actually been leading investment relative to other parts of the world. So I think governments are just going to get a lot more involved in the energy space on a forward basis to essentially get us through the current mess.
Francisco, do you think climate change has become a convenient excuse for some of the challenges we face right now, when a lot of it is about investment, a lack thereof, a lack of planning? And I understand we've had a big shock this year, but I think that's a convenient excuse in the minds of many people, Francisco, that we've tried to transition too fast, too quickly, and move away from fossil fuels without a more resilient plan in place. Which one is it?
Look, I mean, I think the climate change data that we're getting every day really points to the urgency of doing something about the carbon emissions that we have on a daily basis. We are warming up the planet very quickly, and we've seen that in Pakistan more recently with pretty catastrophic outcomes. We've seen a complete drop in water reservoirs in the Alps as well, which is leading to lower water river levels across Europe. So I think climate change is real. We're seeing one of the biggest droughts, I think you guys put that out recently. In Europe, we have the biggest drought in 500 years. So you're having a lot of data points out there that really suggest that the climate change is happening very quickly. And that's further straining our energy system as it would. Now, I do think we wouldn't be in the current situation if we hadn't been losing as much Russian energy as we have over the course of the past 6 months, right?
Francisco, can I ask you about proposals in Europe to cap gas prices and what you think of that? I spoke to a guest earlier, and this goes to what you were saying there about relying on Russian energy. I spoke to a guest earlier who said she doesn't want to see a cap on gas prices. She thinks fiscal stimulus should just be given to those who are struggling to pay, because with a cap, you don't have quite such a strong price signal, and we need that to make the transitions and the investments that you talk about.
I think that's completely wrong. I mean, I think you need to put a bit of a cap on the price of gas, and you need to bring, remember, the price of gas is setting the marginal price of electricity, right? So let's say that if the price of electricity is 1,000 euros a megawatt hour, you're not really incentivizing anything at that price point. And there is a clear market failure that I think should encourage governments to take action here. And again, it's pretty simple stuff. I mean, you're above 200 euros a megawatt hour. Most European industrials cannot operate, right? So when you're at 1,000 euros a megawatt hour, this is past beyond the point of demand destruction. And it's also past the point of supply increases of renewable energy in the future. You don't need 1,000 euros a megawatt hour to encourage wind or solar power. You need a much, much lower number. So I think governments are taking the right steps to try to cap the price of gas. And again, it's going to be a subsidy for sure. But I do think that the consequences of not tackling the current shortage of gas in Europe could be devastating to both consumers and industry over the course of the next 6 months. Remember, you're probably destroying about 5% of European power, gas and power demand every month with this kind of price levels
Unreal.
That we're seeing here.
So, these are just massive numbers, Francisco, that I don't think we've still fully internalized and recognized how bad this is going to be. Francisco Blanch there of Bank of America Global Research. Francisco, you're one of the best. We appreciate your time.
Rubila Faruqi joins us, chief U.S. economist, high frequency economics, always channeling the international views of Carl Weinberg. Rubila, bring it back to America and bring it back to what matters, which is in the ADP report, wages clocked 7%. What will we see on a wage spiral tomorrow?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. What we're expecting to see is, still elevated wage gains, maybe a slight tick up, still a five handle on year-on-year changes in average hourly earnings. The central point of this is, what are we seeing on supply? And we really are not seeing any relief on supply. The participation rate has gone down. If you look at the civilian labor force, it's declined in three of the last 4 months. And that is where the stresses lie. And, without that and without any relief on wage gains, the Fed is going to remain focused on these things. And really, the trajectory is not going to change at all, on tomorrow's numbers.
I find the analysis of a Fed action, and this goes to Kashkari of Minneapolis, but a Fed action to desire to move the unemployment rate higher to be way too simple. What's the complex part of that analysis that matters for our viewers and listeners?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing right now is severe dislocations in the labor market, right? We're seeing supply and demand imbalances. Does the Fed necessarily want to see the unemployment rate go up? No, absolutely not. I mean, that's not what central banks want. But, in this instance, we keep hearing about a tight labor market, and Chair Powell has said a labor market that is, tight to an unhealthy level. So that's what we're trying to figure out. How can this Fed, orchestrate a rate hiking cycle where there's still positive growth, but unemployment goes up, but not by much? And I think the best case for them is that, the demand side is so strong that you're going to see limited increase in layoffs. But I'm not really sure that is really possible.
Okay, Rubila, good morning from London. You talked about participation having dropped off, and clearly during COVID and in the immediate aftermath, it was obvious why that was. What's your analysis now of why participation is so poor? There are similarities with the UK market, and it's clear why it's poor here. But what's the story in the US?
I mean, what we're seeing is, elevated retirements that really contributed in a large way. We still have people who are suffering the effects of COVID, who are still being affected by the effects of COVID. And you're still seeing, some challenges in terms of, prime age participation, in terms of childcare issues, health issues, elder care issues. So those things are still persisting. And it's really not clear that we're going to see any relief. What we did see last time around was, as we were going into in 2019 before the COVID crisis, what we saw was a strong labor market did draw people back into the labor force. And that's what the Fed really is looking for, that strong job growth, high inflation, the lure of higher wages. Maybe that is where the relief comes in. But really, that's not something that is part of a base case scenario anymore. We've been expecting for participation to go up, and we really haven't seen it.
So if we want job openings to come down, it has to come from unemployment. It has to come from layoffs then, Rubila?
Well, not necessarily. We do think that demand for labor is going to go down. But we're trying to figure out, why are layoffs so low? Is it just that demand is strong, or is it that companies are also reluctant? They've suffered, persistent shortages. So are they just hanging on to their workforce? Are they just reluctant to let go of their workers?
Rubila, here's the mystery question right now. What is non-farm payroll's normal number? It used to be 200, and we'd model out 150. We all got that wrong. That was a great wrong call of a decade. We're now rocking 280, 300,000, 320,000 per month. What's normal?
It's very difficult to assess what this labor market is, what normal is, where we are going to balance out. If we look at the numbers, break even is probably around 100,000, maybe slightly less.
Really?
But yeah, exactly. But again, we are basing our analysis on things that prevailed before the pandemic. So it's really difficult to assess. Right now, what we're seeing is, you know, extremely solid job growth. And also, I mean, it's really not tying in with the concept of, you know, economy that has really, you know, just flattened out in the first half of the year. But, you know, what's appearing now is companies still, you know, adding to their workforce, and the unemployment rate at historical lows, maybe even set to go down a little bit more. And, you know, a Fed that is facing a huge challenge.
Rabida, a massive challenge, and not just the Fed, the ECB has a challenge of its own. Rabida Farooqi there of High Frequency Economics.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It's a rare and beautiful thing, John. She's here for what, John? Is this like a 2-hour interview we're doing?
I think this is 2 hours.
we could do it now.
Pushed into like 12. 10 minutes, Tom.
Here's what you need to know. In 1961, a young boy named Mick Jagger went to the London School of Economics and went down in flames in mathematics. Tracy Alloway followed on from Mick Jagger and actually got through the rigorous math course to get your way along at LSE and went on to a sterling journalism career, including working with Mr. Wiesenthal on Odd Lots, and she joins us here on the aerospace engineer from Minneapolis. Does Kashkari know what he's talking about?
Well, the interesting thing about Kashkari is that he's transformed from the Fed's biggest dove into the biggest hawk. And he says it's because he's been watching the data. Data didn't come in quite the way he thought it would. So like Keynes, he changed his mind, right? So that's the interesting thing about him at the moment.
I mean, I look at this, Tracy, and what's so important here is what do the monetary pros think? It was Clarida, and now it's maybe John Williams and a few others. What do they think of presidents shooting from the hip?
That's quite a question. What I will say, you know, Jonathan kind of alluded to this about the interview that we had with Kashkari, where he was talking about how he welcomed that stock reaction, stocks actually going down following Jackson Hole. I cannot believe that markets were so surprised. You have had a Fed and you've had central bankers on the Fed talking about how they want financial conditions to tighten for months and months and months. And a component of financial conditions, of course, it's stocks.
Financial conditions. They need stocks lower. They need spreads wider. Tracy, what was the biggest piece of pushback you had against that? Because I was watching all the commentary over Twitter, the people who were surprised and you and I who were surprised about them being surprised. What was the biggest piece of pushback that you saw from this interview?
There were a lot of people talking about how the Fed said the quiet part out loud, but these are the same people who would make jokes about how the Fed only wants to push up asset prices for the past 5 or 10 years, right? If the Fed only wants to push up asset prices, then they can have situations where they also want to push them down. Now is arguably one of those times. The Fed is explicitly telling you that it needs financial conditions to tighten in order to get a grip on inflation. The components of financial conditions got things like mortgage spreads, bonds, and of course, stocks. So I'm not entirely sure why people were so surprised.
Hi, Tracy. Yeah, it was a really fascinating conversation that you had with him. I mean, if you want tighter financial conditions, you mentioned the other ways you get tighter financial conditions. Do we have a sense of which of the elements the Fed would prefer? I mean, we've got Kashkari saying stocks doesn't mind if they go down, but that's not quite the same thing as saying, you know, you really want them to drop.
Yeah, well, I think the big question in markets right now is why, even with all this Fed jawboning, why financial conditions haven't tightened more? Why are investors, I guess, dragging their feet when it comes to this issue? Does the Fed have a preference on exactly what moves the most? I think it doesn't want to see anything break in the financial market. It doesn't necessarily want to cut off capital inflows. It doesn't want to see a seize up in the credit market, which is something that we almost saw over the summer. But that said, it still want something to happen. And the longer this sort of tension, the standoff between investors and the Fed goes on, the more likely we are to see a big move from the central bank that actually gets us there.
And that was really interesting in the context of what we've saw from UBS and others around credit markets just in the last 24 hours, saying credit markets are simply not pricing in enough a chance of a recession. We saw this from UBS. They said credit markets, by their analysis, are just giving it a 25% chance when actually they think it should be pricing in for a much higher chance that we get a recession in the US. Maybe this is the mismatch that you're talking about.
Yeah, this is kind of the amazing thing about the credit market at the moment. So you look at something like high yield spreads, so risk premiums on junk rated bonds. These are the things that are supposed to show concerns about a looming recession first. And we are far, far from those levels. I think it's something like 800 basis points on the high yield index. We're at like 450 right now. And then you have other people who are saying, well, don't look at junk bonds because the junk bond market has changed so much over the years. You know, it's mostly double B rated debt now. It's far from what it used to be. Look at something like leveraged loans. These are the floating rate loans that junk rated companies took out en masse for the past 5 years. They're supposedly very risky, or there are some people in the market that think they are very risky. And so those are where the first signs of stress could show up. But even if you look at the S&P LSTA leverage loan index, we're at something like 95 on the cash level now.
Right.
85 is generally considered distressed.
Tracy, when you were at the Convent of the Sacred Heart in Tokyo a million years ago, you used to sneak into the Imperial Bar at the Imperial Hotel. The
front. How did you know that?
I knew that. You know, rumor has it. What does Japan do? As JP Morgan says, there could be a 140, 145 yen. Everybody's standing around in the West going, no big deal. I don't buy it.
Well, this is the other big question that I have about the Fed right now. And I actually asked Kashkari about this. What happens to the rest of the world when you are raising rates at the fastest pace in decades? We've already seen the dollar appreciate considerably. We haven't necessarily seen U.S. financial conditions move as much as we might expect, but we know that financial conditions elsewhere in the world are tightening. That seems like a problem for me when you're talking about economies, you know, Europe, emerging markets, to some extent, Japan, that are now experiencing an energy crisis and everything is priced in dollars. The Fed is heaping more pain on the rest of the world. The U.S. economy is relatively resilient right now, but at some point you're going to get that boomerang effect. That's what Kashkari called it, where it comes back and it impacts the U.S. economy.
Interesting. Tracy, it's been too long. Is the podcast out right now?
It's out right now.
Fantastic.
Check out Oddlots. I was talking
Here's the promo. Gotta have it. Come on,
squeeze
come
it
on,
in.
Come on.
That's the thing,
I
Tom.
Was talking with Tom, and you know, he was actually our first guest when we launched the podcast five or six years
ago. The show went
ago.
Up from there, John.
Downhill from there, or yeah. Uphill from there.
Up
rather.
There. Up
uphill.
There.
Uphill.
I would say uphill. Yes.
Tracy Alloway, Joe Weissenthal of Oddlots.
You guys could
look
do Pharaoh, you know. You
just
could do a whole football.
That is really downhill, Tom. I think they want some expertise on markets, not on football at the weekend.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and, of course, on the Terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.